Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mom of the Hard Kid. Today, I wanted to address the tantrums. I wanted to address the difference between tantrums from neurotypical children and tantrums from the mentally ill. I'm not even going to go to the neurodivergent area. I'm going to go to the mentally ill and just straight up start there. I was watching YouTube and up pops this video. I think I actually went and found it. And it was talking about how to stop tantrums forever. In three easy steps, everyone. Three easy steps to stop tantrums forever. And I'm not going to lie, when I went there, I was honestly thinking, I'm willing to check this out. I'm willing to see what this man says. And let me tell you what his advice is. The first piece of advice he has is that timeouts have to be isolated and you have to do it essentially, this says, as a robot, like without emotion. The second is redirecting them. And then the third is to build them up, to sort of bring them back into a place where they are redirected and distracted from whatever's bothering them and then kind of making them happy again. I'm not even sure that this is bad advice, but I know that if you have a child that has a mental health issue as a toddler, this is never going to fly. It's not. So when you go to your healthcare professional and you're like, hey, my child's doing this and they're giving you advice like this, know that this might work for 90% of the children on this planet. It might be very good advice for them, but know that if your child has a sincere mental illness or serious issues such as reactive attachment disorder or mood disorders or other things, neglect, things like that, fetal alcohol disorder, you're not going to get some of the same reactions that they might get with these more neurotypical children. And I really think that even though this advice is not bad, I think it really shows the disconnect between medical professionals and mentally ill children. If you ignore a reactive attachment child, if you put them in their room, which he recommends, and even sometimes locking it from the outside, and he's like, if you leave them in there, your house will be ruined. And when I say ruined, I mean you will have fecal matter and urine on the floors. You'll have holes in your walls. You'll have furniture toppled over and broken. These kids hate being ignored. One of the things that I said about my child, and I say about my child who has reactive attachment disorder, is that when she realized she was not going to be ignored, she kind of put it in her mind that she will never be ignored again. One of the meanest things you can do to a child with reactive attachment disorder is to ignore them. And then when you add on what that means, it also means one of the worst things you can do for yourself. Because if you ignore them, they are going to resort back to all of those feelings that they had about being neglected, which are hardwired or deep wired, maybe not hardwired, but they are deeply wired in their brain, and you're going to have to deal with the consequences of them feeling upset. So I know that there are some parents out there who are like, oh, I'm so mad at your behavior. Look at what I'm going to do to you. I'm going to ignore you. And I promise their ability to dish out a punishment will be far more severe than your ability to feel, I don't know what the word is, content about the fact that you ignored them for a few minutes. Bad idea. So even now, when my 6-year-old daughter is, you know, who's in a good place right now, I would say, and who's medicated and we're in a good place, but even now, when she's calmed down quite a bit from all those previous behaviors, I cannot send her to her room until she's calmed down at least 50%. Or things are going to get broken. Things are going to get a heel through the wall. You're going to have, heaven forbid, there are scissors in that room, which there have been because she shares it with her sister. And sometimes she steals the scissors herself and hides them in her bedroom. But stuff will be so ruined. But back in the height of it, of her bad behaviors, any amount of her perceiving me to be ignoring her would have resulted in a stealthy barrage of maladaptive behavior, something like putting boogers on door handles, tearing up books that I was reading or things that she thought were important to me. And she would also do things where she would lay it by my bed so that I would see it when I came into my room. So the advice that he gives isn't bad advice, but it just doesn't work with genuinely mentally ill children. It doesn't work. So when you go to your mental health professional and you're like, oh, here's what's happening, and they're giving you this advice, you're like, oh, maybe this is not going to be working. So when it goes to step number two, which is redirect, the only way in our situation that redirect would work is if you framed it in a way that fed the child's ego. So if you're going to a regular child, and in this particular case, it's focused on tantrums of young children, but I would give any of the advice to any age group going up that I give. So anyway, advice, take all of my advice with a grain of salt, because I am just a mom, just explaining our situation and what has helped us. So do know that. But if I were to try to redirect her, not only would she see through that and not be fazed, but she would then question my intentions. Because in her mind, if I'm trying to redirect her and say, oh, look how shiny this is, look how shiny this is, there is a certain amount of trust that comes in to valuing whether somebody says that this shiny thing should be looked at. So when these kids have no trust, they are going to say, why are you telling me to look at this shiny thing? I think you're doing it so that you can do something else to me. Like, they are constantly in that fight or flight. They are constantly questioning you. They don't have trust in you. And you can't redirect them like you can other children. Now, again, if your kid is, you know, more neurotypical and less mentally ill, this might really work for them. Go ahead and redirect them. I used to be able to do it with my three older children, you know, when they're having a hard time, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, look at how funny this piece of bread looks, or whatever, some kind of redirection, get their mind away from what they were focused on. It would work. But it did not work for this youngest one who has reactive attachment disorder. She could see through the charade. And even though this kind of bleeds into the third step where compliments, you know, are involved, but every word out of my mouth was acutely scanned for sincerity. And there's a time where she just assumes that everything I say is kind of bull and lies or not valuable, and I'm dismissed right off. But if my words are presumed insincere, then you can, you know, rewind back to the things that we talked before, where you end up with fecal matter on the toilet seat and ignoring any kind of direction and pretending that they don't understand any direction. Now, I know that every kid goes through a phase where you say, oh, I need you to, you know, make your bed. And they're like, I don't know how. And you're like, well, I still need you to make your bed. I know that kids do this. But there's just this deeper intensity and this vitriol and hatred that comes through when a reactive attachment child gets in that mode. I don't know how to explain it, but I do know that every parent of a child who has a severe case of reactive attachment disorder knows exactly what I'm talking about. So again, this is not bad advice to redirect your child. It just doesn't really work for the mentally ill. It's like telling a severely ADHD child that they need to sit absolutely still or quiet for 10 hours straight. It is not going to happen. So what do we do when there is a disconnect between medical professionals and the reality that is happening in our home? First off, I am going to recommend that you come prepared, that you write things down. You bring the receipts, as the current saying goes. And if you are not believed, document that you were not believed. Write that down too. every doctor that you see and you write their opinions, you write the response, you keep an entire tally in a special journal about your child. Number two, I think you need to learn your stuff. You need to learn the diagnoses that your kids have. You need to learn the related diagnoses that your kids have or that they are susceptible to. You need to learn the signs. And without being arrogant, you need to let the medical professionals know that you're aware of the difference between something such as a tantrum and a rage episode, and that you're aware that most kids act a particular way and that your kid has different things. Because if you're a medical professional, people are coming into you all the time and they're all stressed and they're all overwhelmed. And it might be really easy to sort of become dismissive. All these moms are burnt out. All these moms think their kids are crazy, right? Like, it's understandable in a way that they don't understand what you're talking about, but you need to let them know that you know the difference between those things. You need to say, hey, I understand kids throw tantrums. This is not a tantrum. This is bigger than a tantrum. And you need to say it in a way that they can understand that you know what you're talking about because you've learned it and you know what you're talking about. Number three, don't be afraid to say, I don't think we're on the same page. I feel like when you're hearing me say, Janie throws tantrums, what I'm actually saying is Janie intentionally disrupts the evening when she gets caught breaking the rules. And this will result in a 3-hour fight / tantrum until it escalates into self-harm or destruction of property. So you need to be able to explain yourself. Slow down. Give detailed pieces of information. Because if you just say, she screams a lot, he throws things, those are the same types of information that fit with a normal, well-developed young child that throws things. Now, as their child gets older, it is a little less common to do these behaviors, but it's not unheard of. And so they're not going to be able to make that distinction unless you clarify your situation with more information. And number four, trust yourself. It's also fair to say, I'm not sure this is a good fit, but could you recommend somebody who really focuses on children who have attachment disorders or mood disorders or tantrum for 6+ hours a day? Is there someone you can recommend? Because that was incredibly hard for me when I'm talking to this therapist and we are having this communication disconnect. And I'm thinking she should understand what I'm saying because she's a professional. And the truth is, as rare as reactive attachment is, a lot of these professionals have no clue what it really means. Occasionally you'll get one, and the way that that person has learned about it has been through one poor family or maybe two poor families who have really been through the ringer. And a lot of times these things get passed up, passed over, passed on, ignored, blamed on the parents, and you end up not having anybody that really believes you. So be sure to trust yourself. And if that person is not the right fit for you, if you go to this doctor who's on YouTube and who's probably a really great pediatrician, and if you go to him and you say, whoa, 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 there's a disconnect here. Because I have a psychiatrist for my daughter and he is constantly saying things that I'm like, I don't think you know what you're talking about. I don't think you understand this. And he's like, one of the things, I've told this before, but he was like, you give her too much attention. I'm trying to have a conversation with you and you won't let her have a conversation. And at the time, it was really eye-opening because I was like, oh, no, I've trained her into this to do this with her teacher because now she needs all the attention from her teacher. But the truth is, she actually trained me into that because that was not the type of mother that I was before she came. And that is the only way I could save myself from the hours of screaming and tantruming and destroying things and her self-harm and those kinds of issues. So I mean, there's been a lot of examples. I still like him. I think he does his best, but it sure would be nice if your medical professional knew what you were talking about. And I really recommend that you take a book called Reactive Attachment Disorder, RAD, by Carrie Williams. And it's just a small book. It explains it. Take it with you when you go to a doctor appointment. Explain it. I think it's very nice and easy reading, very clearly laid out. There's also another book by Nancy Thomas called When Love Is Not Enough. And I really recommend taking these books with you. When you read them, grab a highlighter, put some post-it notes in those things, have your reference points and say, here's what happens here. This is what she says happens to her. This is what happens to us. This, you know, and just be able to come with your information so that they can more clearly understand what you're coming from. Where you're coming from. And for heaven's sakes, just like you should take every word I say with a grain of salt, because I'm just a mom who had its experiences and I'm telling my experiences, take these people's words with a grain of salt. Know that they are coming from their angle. They might know something, they might not know something. And know that you, even though you're so desperate for someone to save you from this situation, probably you're not going to find the holy grail of answers in one visit or from one person. It's going to take a lifetime of little pieces here and there to be able to build up a situation for your child, a positive situation for your child. But I hope you find it. I hope we all find it. And I wish you all the best. Thanks so much for joining me.